Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow for Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. It is December 11th, 2016. At least it's already December 11th, 2016 in Israel. But I'm in Los Angeles. I've got a couple hours to go. And I'm with Dr. Gerard Medioni, who is a professor at USC and an expert in computer vision. And I kind of found my way to him this week. And full disclosure, we're also semi-related. We share some nieces and nephews. But the idea of computer vision kind of hit the headlines in a very odd way this week. And I wanted to share with you this very exciting thing. So first of all, thank you, Gerard, for joining me today.
My pleasure.
And tell us, what is computer vision?
So computer vision, think of it as what we do on a daily basis. We open our eyes, we look at the picture, we don't see dots. We don't see little dots everywhere. What we see is faces, we see objects, we see scenes, we see the sky, we see the water. The question is, how do we do this? It seems so obvious. And then when we try to do this with computers, it's very hard because all the computer sees is a bunch of numbers. So computer vision is a process by which we try to replicate this amazing capability of the eye and the brain to turn pixels, which are these little individual points of lights, into semantic entities, things like faces, smiles, and bottles, and tables, and so on. So that's what computer vision is all about, trying to understand just what the contents of images is. And then when you go to video, we understand not just that it's a set of points that are moving in time, but we understand that a person is moving, we understand intent, we understand actions. And again, that's the other piece of computer vision. So really what we're trying to do is build something like a brain, a camera with a brain.
I mean, it almost sounds to me like sometimes I look at my six-month-old granddaughter and I can see almost from day to day how she responds differently. Like her brain is figuring, I guess we all do this when we're little and we look at something, we have no idea what we're looking at because there's no reference in our head to tell us it's X. So in some ways, do you mimic that learning process that we have when we're children in that first year of life?
I don't think so. I think we are wired to see. Babies will see very blurry in the beginning, but it's not something that we teach them. You don't show them thousands of pictures of an elephant, for example, for them to recognize an elephant. You see one picture and they have seen all the elephants in the world. They can recognize it. We are wired for it. And that's why it's so hard for us to understand how it works. Whereas today in computer vision, you'll hear words like artificial intelligence. You'll hear about deep learning, where what we do is we show thousands, tens of thousands, or millions of images of something, and then the computer learns how to recognize them. I don't believe that this is the way humans do it, but it works. So that's what computer vision state of the art is today.
How did you get into this field? It's not like this is a 300-year-old field that, you know, you learned from your father. This is something so new.
It's very interesting. The reason I got into this field, I was in engineering school in France, and I had a project where we drew some images, and it was fascinating because the result of it is that it was posted all over the wall. And I said, wow, this is great. Even if people don't understand what I'm doing, I can always show them images. And that's what got me into the field of image understanding, computer vision. And at the same time, I thought it was so hard that I knew I would have worked for the next 20, 30 years without having solved the problem. And again, we have not solved the problem today. We have made tremendous progress, but it's still a very wide open field.
Well, so what are some of the applications of this field?
Everything is an application of this field. I mean, you can talk about the military to start with. The military are the funding agencies that gave us the money in the early days to explore, because you can think of being able to have a robot a tank that drives itself. You can have a missile that guides itself. You can have all this self-avoidance. Today, the application is in self-driving cars. Anything that is autonomous. When you talk about autonomy, you need perception. And the best type of perception is visual perception. So once you allow a computer to have this sense of perception, the possibilities are endless.
And so what I noticed this week, I saw a YouTube that's got a video that's gotten, I don't know, millions of hits already. The last time I checked, it was 4 million, and I'm sure that it's going up exponentially, about something called Amazon Go, which looks like the way we're going to go grocery shopping in the future. And my understanding is that you have been a part of this. What can you tell me?
What I can tell you is for the past 2.5 years, I have been at Amazon working on this amazing Amazon Go project. I can't tell you more than that, except that, yes, as you can see in the video, it involves computer vision and artificial intelligence.
Okay, so I'll fill in since I do a lot more. I spend a lot more time in the grocery store than I'd like to. Go and see this YouTube. It has you go, you have an app, and you go into the store with your, I guess, your Amazon app, and you can take whatever you want off the shelf and walk out of the store and through the sensor, and then you get the bill in your phone like 30 seconds later. And so there's no waiting in line, and there's no checkout. And somehow, which I suppose at some point in the future, maybe we'll find out, I'm seeing a smile here, how maybe it works, except that that it has to do with this whole technology of computer vision. And this store is already open in Seattle, right? The prototype store is already in Seattle?
Yes, that's what you see in the video. Mm-hmm. There is a store in Seattle.
Okay, that's, I think, as much as we're going to get here right now. You spent some time in Israel. I know that you've consulted for a few firms in Israel and have worked on the idea of computer vision. How does Israel fit in here? How do you find Israeli companies, the Israeli mind? Is that also something that fits in well with this kind of technology?
Computer vision is a field which is essential to Israel. The number of images that Israel uses for its own purposes is obvious, mostly for the military, but other applications. The second thing is Israel is the place for innovation. I mean, we talk about Israel as startup nation. Many of the companies in Israel are using computer vision and are pioneering some new ideas in computer vision. I believe that Israel has the largest number of professors that are teaching computer vision, that are creating computer vision experts. So if you really want to do computer vision, this is the place where you go look for talent. We have many students around the world that were educated in Israel. I was involved with a number of companies in Israel, actually, that are related to computer vision as a consultant for some of these companies. I can mention some of these. The one you probably know best is called PrimeSense. If you have ever played video games on the Xbox using what is called the Kinect was really an Israeli product, the Prime Sensor. PrimeSense is a company I was involved with both as a board member and as a consultant. We built a technology that created 3D depth images so that you don't just see the visual, but you also the distance to the camera that allowed people to play games without any joystick or any remote control. This revolutionized a number of fields, including robotics. Robotics suddenly changed thanks to the Prime Sensor, and the company was sold to Apple in December 2013. That was one of the companies that I've worked with. I've worked with companies such as Agent VI, which is a leading video surveillance company in Israel, and a few others. But again, I want to say that Israel is really a center for computer vision. Every year, there is a conference called the Israel Vision Days that gathers students and academics and a few companies. And I'm giving a lecture this December 25th at IDC in Herzliya. I'm giving the opening lecture on face recognition using computer vision. There's also another conference, which was the Image and Vision Computing in Tel Aviv, and I gave the keynote lecture in April, this March or April in 2016, this year.
So where do you see this field going? So now we have Amazon Go, and it's going on a very practical level for all of us who don't live in, you know, universities and don't develop things. It's going to change our lives, or could, has the possibility really of changing lives on a very basic level, you know, just grocery shopping. What are the other things that you see, the other applications? Like there's the cars, the self-driving cars, and there's drone technology, which as an Israeli, I know is huge, that you can have, you know, get the information without risking lives. Where do you see this going, though, both in the civilian sphere and in the military sphere?
It is a red hot field. Right now, anybody who can say I'm an expert or I'm a student of computer vision can get a job immediately for salaries that is very high compared to the rest of the industry. Machine learning, computer vision, artificial intelligence, those are kind of buzzwords. But if you are in one of these fields today, the world is open to you. Now, the applications are limitless. There is no limit to what you can do once you start embedding intelligence into a camera. Today, you have companies such as Ring or Nest that are transforming the home. Instead of having just a doorbell, what you have is a camera with a doorbell. Where with a camera with a doorbell, you can see who is coming at your door. You can look at what happens on the other side of the door. Today we have Alexa. You know, you have system you can talk to. So you have some system now becomes intelligent. You can talk to it, and if it can empower it with some vision, then suddenly you have a super intelligent assistant in your home. The application, for example, for elder care are huge. The application in medical diagnosis are there. So to me, computer vision is a core element of the future of technology in the world.
So what are the social ramifications for this? Like getting back to, let's say, the grocery store. So, you know, there are people in the world who that's what they do. They sit and they're the checkout lady or the checkout guy. If we make jobs like this redundant because so many things now become computerized, what effect could it have on the world? Like where do these people go? What do these people do? Is anyone thinking about in a bigger picture how this is going to change societies?
So I'm not sure, first of all, that it removes jobs. What it creates is a new set of jobs. Any jobs in computer science, you could say, is changing the landscape of the workforce. But that's inevitable. The key is for governments, in my view, to think about the social implication and to say, what is the education we need to give to the next generation so that they can be productive member of the society in a society which is going to be increasingly tech-oriented. But saying that they are just removing jobs is not the right way to think about it. It creates new jobs. They are just different from the one that was there before.
But do they need smart people? I mean, if you're just going to have jobs like this that need, you know, a certain level of skills that, let's face it, a lot of people don't have. So what education, you say that, and absolutely, the governments need to take upon themselves to educate people towards the new world that's coming, that's already here. So what should people be studying that they are not studying now?
Again, you're asking me as a technologist. Mm-hmm. It is a difficult question to answer. But if you look at what happened with disruptive technology, such as the smartphone, yes, you could say the smartphone has changed the way we do business. But you can look at, for example, Uber and Lyft. They have actually created jobs. Mm-hmm. Yes, they have disrupted the taxi and limo industry. But as a result of it, you have 5 million people who are now earning a living by driving their own car. So I think we need to stop thinking in terms of this is a fixed sum game, a zero sum game, and that it is a negative force in terms of the workplace. I don't believe so. I think we are undergoing some changes and we need to adapt. Certainly, there is a social aspect to it that governments need to worry about. But I don't see it as a negative saying we are losing jobs and therefore, people are going to be out of work. That is not the right way to think about mm-hmm. it.
Well, look, these things have already happened in history. Like you used to have women sitting and sewing all day in these sweatshops. And now a lot of clothing is just made by machines. So I guess at some point those people found a different job, a different career, or just certain professions just went out and others took their place.
Again, to me, this type of progress is ineluctable. At the time of the Industrial Revolution, there were people who revolted. The Luddites was a movement who said, we're not going to do it. It is not sustainable. This is progress. This is going to happen whether we want it or not. So the right way to think about is embrace these technological changes and see how we can adapt to it so that we can have a social structure in place that adapts to it as opposed to just resisting it.
So we tend to look at all this from the perspective of Westerners, North Americans, Europeans, the advanced societies, if you want, the first world countries. Does any of this have any of what you're doing here, any of this technology, will it have an impact, let's say, on South America or Africa or some of the poorer places in the country, in the world, who are not going to have an Amazon Go? Like they're just worried about getting food at all, not taking half an hour less to get their groceries, into the house because they don't want to wait in the checkout. Like, do you see this in a global sense, or that's not where you are?
So first of all, I don't want to comment on the Amazon Go part,
right.
But if you look at it as a technological side of it, once we opened up the bandwidths, once we said that communication cost is nearly zero, then suddenly we opened markets in those places. The workforce in India has dramatically changed over the past 20 years. There is now a middle class in India that did not exist before. Why? It's because now they can work for European companies, American companies, create startups, and so on. So I don't believe that it is just a first world or industrialized work impact. It has a worldwide impact.
Okay, I hope you're right. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that was very interesting. Thanks for interviewing me.
Okay, my pleasure, Dr. Gerard Medioni. I don't think we've heard the last from him yet. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation. I will be right back.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself. And I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff, will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.
This is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. My maternal grandparents, Grandpa Morris and Grandma Lily, came to the United States from Russia over 100 years ago. They belonged to the Mizrahi movement way before there was even a state of Israel. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement. Hey everybody, Eve Harrow. Still not quite December 11th where I am here in Los Angeles. I hope that you enjoyed the interview with Dr. Gerard Medioni. Clearly, things he had to dance around saying, even though the YouTube video came out about Amazon Go, and there have been articles about it in the Wall Street Journal and pretty much all over the press. He's the director of the project, and there's still kind of a press blackout, but you heard it here first, of course. We're just always breaking the news over here on the Land of Israel Network. I just could not let go the opportunity that I had since I was here in Los Angeles, and since I've known him for a long, long time, and just watching his career develop, and the time he spent in Israel, and just honing his skills. I just couldn't resist the opportunity to get him on tape just as much as he could, and talking about computer vision and where we're going in the future. Obviously, like with all technologies, it can be used for nefarious purposes, and let's hope that that doesn't happen, and that the good guys keep enough firewalls or whatever it is that they can around these new applications, so that they can be only used for making our shopping experience better, or protecting us with the drones and the other technology, or driverless cars or whatever it is that can make us safer on our roads and, just streamline our lives. As the world kind of sometimes I think is propelling itself into a very, very quickly into some unknown places, so much that I don't understand. And I just hope that the good guys remain in control. Because there's really some bad people out there who are trying to wrest this whole thing away from us. And speaking of which, is even though I'm far away in body, never far away in spirit or in mind from my beloved country, and very concerned about what's happening in Amona, this whole idea that it's okay to destroy Jewish homes just has to be done with. I'm not going to get into the whole thing. I know that some of my fellow show hosts have done a fantastic job in explaining what the situation is there, and I don't need to reiterate the things that they've already laid out, but just my own personal feelings, and I was in Gush Katif 11 years ago until the very last minute, and it just can't happen again. And it's not just a matter of like moving down the block. The trauma and the betrayal and the disappointment and just a whole row of things that happens when this kind of thing occurs. It's just enough. It's just really enough. And it's time that we just said, this is our land. 50 years ago, you waged war on us from these places because it wasn't enough. The huge waged war on us 19 years before and killed 1% of our population. Is the whole idea is just to eradicate Jewish state of any size and shape, not being able to beat us militarily. So they're trying to wear us down morally and from the inside, and sadly enough, have some allies among my co-religionists, which is one of the things that probably breaks my heart almost more than anything else. So I hope that some way this is found so that Amona will not be destroyed, because it's really not just about Amona. It's about this whole idea of to whom the land belongs, and once and for all, somebody in a position of power just has to get the guts to say, it's the Israelis, it's the Jews, it's ours, and we're very happy for people to live within our borders and coexist with us, but we are the sovereign here, and not the other way around. And living in for 50 years in this kind of like whatever situation that it doesn't really belong to anybody has left open, wide open the field for exactly what we're seeing today. And really, enough is enough. 50 years is way too long. And so I hope as I go home in the middle of this week that things will have somehow worked themselves out. It's been a great trip here to the States in Florida. I really had a wonderful time, met with fabulous people, talked to school children, both in elementary schools and in high schools, women's groups, physicians groups, others. I was brought there by the Jewish National Fund to try and impart the love and the passion that I have for my country to others, so they'll get involved. And
you know, fill in the gaps and do things that make life easier and better for us and bring more people to live in this miraculous country that just gets better and better all the time, despite setbacks that we have sometimes, like what I said, like with Amona. So we're still a work in progress, but overall the trajectory is positive and up. And I couldn't be prouder to represent Israel in any forms that I go, and my people and my religion and my God. It's really something else. It's, somebody said to me, I met someone here, because this is where I grew up in Los Angeles, and I met someone a little while ago who said to me, wow, like you really reinvented yourself. And I don't think that I reinvented myself. I think that Hashem just gave me gifts and an ability to do things for my people that I never would have had, had I not taken the step, had I not taken the initiative of moving to Israel. And again, you know, that's really the ultimate partnership for all of us, is take the steps, have the positive feeling, feel like you're doing the right thing. And then Hashem will, you know, throw in his bit, so that we can make it good and do things that need to be done. And you know, it's just overwhelming, and I'm full of gratitude. So have a great week, everybody. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation. Thanks to Ben. Thanks to Tabitha. Can't wait to get home. Take care, everybody. Goodbye for now.
Hey folks, this is Jeremy Gimpel. I want you to know, if you're a non-Jew from a Christian background or just a full-fledged Christian and you want to come to Israel, the best program, tour, experience that you could possibly have is to go with HaYovel. Now it's weird, I'm an Orthodox Jewish rabbi and I'm telling Christians to go to this Christian ministry in the middle of Samaria. Let me tell you, there is no better experience for someone outside of the land, outside of the Jewish fold, to come into the land and work alongside the Jewish farmers of Samaria, to learn about the culture, to meet the people. It's an experience like no other, and I think it's also probably the cheapest way to travel to Israel. So go to hayovel.com.
Josh Haston here, host of Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Radio Network at thelandofisrael.com. Make sure you check out my show every Monday, bringing you the news unfiltered and uncensored, information that you are not getting anywhere else, especially not in the mainstream media.
Israel Uncensored with Josh Haston on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.